Welcome to episode 9 of Techish Podcast featuring Abdesi.
And Michael Bain. We back.
For another episode. Whew, it's been a crazy week in tech.
Yeah, what's popping?
I never thought that I would see Mark Zuckerberg like at a Senate hearing.
I
didn't think the day would come. Like when I think of like watching The Social Network as a bright-eyed, bushy-tailed young person thinking...
That's what got you into tech, isn't it?
It's what got me into tech.
Yeah, so...
The tech utopia, the future is here, and suddenly, boom.
Oh, my days.
In front of the lawmakers. I was actually kind of disappointed. No, I was not disappointed by the incredible amount of memes that came out of that hearing.
Did you see the Cardi B one?
What was that one?
I think they dressed him up as Cardi B and called it like invasion of privacy. Something I can't remember. It was something crazy.
I just saw the ones which were like all around this theme of him not being human or being, you know, robot. So it's just like humans drink water. And there's this like scene where he just like picks up the water glass and
drinks it. He does look like Data from... Star Trek, he does look a bit like him. I kind of feel sorry for those kind of like, I felt sorry for him for a bit, like, didn't you?
I think I did, and then I remembered what his bank balance is, and I felt okay again. You know what I mean? Because the reality is, there is still a bit of like dodging going around, you know, like, oh, we run ads, Senator. We just run ads. That's all we do. And the fact is,
I think he was feigning innocence to a certain extent.
Of course.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's so easy to, you know, shy away from accountability and ownership when you're facing jail time.
Do you think they didn't ask him like the hard hitting questions?
I definitely think that, like, with the first hearing, that was certainly the case. And that's, like, what loads of journalists were saying as well. They were asking stuff like, so what is Facebook? And I'm like, come on, man. Like, what do you do exactly?
Yeah, like, so putting you on the spot, what would you have asked him if you were in that position? What would you have wanted to have known?
I would have been like, why did you let these companies take data from your users without your users fully understanding what was being taken and how it was being used. I would just go straight in with the direct hits.
Like Erica Joy from, I think she's at Patreon now. She tweeted out like, ask him, what data do you have about people that don't have a Facebook account? They call them shadow profiles.
Wow.
So if you uploaded a picture of you and you don't have a Facebook account, Facebook might collate all of those informations about you and they call them shadow profile. I don't know. First.
So many stories.
Just that was something positive because that Zuckerberg one was slightly depressing.
Yeah, let's do that.
All right, shout out to General Assembly.
Good news for General Assembly.
Yeah, they got sold for 400 plus milli.
That is a good exit.
And what was the company called? Adecco?
Adecco, yeah. So Adecco, it's so interesting. Like,
had you heard of them before this?
I had never heard of them. Yeah. And this made me realise, like, there's so much money in tech, all the big acquisitions.
But are they a tech company? I think they're just like a training human resources company.
But they do develop training software for companies. But yes, you're right. Yeah. It's like, what are they calling it? You know, HR company, future of education, future of work.
Yeah.
There have been a lot of, like, interesting conversations around, like, HR tech and edutech.
Yeah.
And basically, like, what does the workforce look like in the future, especially with AI threatening jobs? So it was, like, really interesting to see this company get acquired. What I thought was really interesting about General Assembly as well was 2 years ago, this was a stat that was in the TechCrunch article, only 15% of total annual revenue came from B2B. Because most people think of General Assembly and think of coding schools and design classes and stuff. They've now, within the last 2 years, been able to completely flip their revenue model so that the majority of revenue comes from B2B.
Which makes sense.
Yeah.
I think companies are desperate to make sure that their engineers or even their non-engineers are basically trained up in the latest skills. Like as a developer, like one of the hardest aspects of it is just staying up to date with what's the newest and latest thing. Like I'm trying to learn machine learning on my own and it's very difficult. Yeah, it's hard.
It's intense.
Yeah, and I'm doing online stuff and obviously trying to run a business at the same time. So, God knows what it must be like if you're working at a company. They'd want you to stay current. So I'm not surprised B2B is their newest and biggest thing.
I would actually be really interested to hear as well from like people listening, like how much of this actually infiltrates into your industry, because I have a feeling that there are certain industries and probably even like certain companies that are like all on board this train of like constant learning and constant development. But at the same time, I feel like I know so many people who have not had any training since they started their job and have no budgets for training whatsoever.
And
so
are those the companies that are going to get left behind, to be brutally honest?
Probably.
It's just the way the economy is going. Everything is so fast moving. Companies are not necessarily even lasting as long as they once did. The life cycle of a tech company now is probably 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
God knows about a normal, just like brick and mortar business. So I think everyone's going to have to. And if you don't, you're just going to get left behind, to be brutally honest.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
So what is the one skill that you want to improve upon? Let's keep it nice and positive.
Ooh, interesting.
That if you had the unlimited time and resources and all the teaching people that were there to help you, what would you want to learn? That you're like, you know, I wish I could do that.
I actually think that one of the most underrated but effective skills is prioritization.
Like, you don't need a General Assembly course for that,
do you? Oh, you're saying like to go on General Assembly? Oh,
or
right.
Like, hypothetically, like,
you
might not be a course they actually do, but if it was like,
hands down, I would do like digital product design. So something around like either like UX or UI or both.
Product designer type stuff.
Because I think product designer is this job title that I didn't even know existed when I was at school. And I certainly didn't think about it. Even at university, right?
I don't think it did, you know.
And it's like got quite a wide spectrum because I meet some product designers who actually don't do any design at all. They just do like more of the research piece. Like thinking about the user and understanding the user's needs and almost like it's quite an academic role at that stage. But then I know some other people who are like always in sketch, like drawing it out, like trying to like, you know, put themselves into the user and think of like, where's the best place for this button, etc. And then you have like the front end developers who actually like make it happen and bring it to life.
It's
but
important
product
though,
design.
If you're like, you know, an aspiring founder, if you've got an eye for product, it's so important. Like I've worked with founders that they can't code a line of anything, but they're just so great with product in terms of visually, user behavior. So yeah, I think that's a great idea.
I think also like design is something that will always be a key to success. It's been like a part of like humanity forever. Like we love looking at the Taj Mahal because it's like beautifully designed. Yeah. Exactly. Like things that we can't even like quite explain. Like people go into like the Conran shop and they're like, yeah, I'm going to pay like £500 more for this rug just because something about it is so
much nicer.
I mean,
look at Apple, the most valuable tech company in the world, and it's 99% of it is based on design. I think if I put in front of you an iPhone or a Pixel in terms of feature for feature, it's not necessarily that different, but people just love the Apple aesthetic.
Exactly.
So,
and also for when the robots take over, I want to make sure I've got a job in that economy because I can design stuff for them.
But
you know what I mean?
Do you think a robot will ever be a good designer? They might be.
Hey, AI
designers,
does art and music.
Yeah, they do music. I think it's dog. I was going to swear there, but I won't.
Some of it's all right, actually. Some of it's all right. I've heard some of the like classical compositions.
But classical, you can kind of get away with, but like, I want to hear these machines.
But drum and bass, no.
I want to hear them spit bars.
Okay, how about you? What would you reskill in?
Definitely like machine learning AI.
Interesting.
It's like I went from when I first started to learn to code, I learned like all this, you know, the new and sexy JavaScript stuff, and it gave me a leap. Like the one thing about learning to code is that even if you're quite a newbie, if you learn the new hot thing, you can kind of almost leapfrog the existing developers because they might all be using like PHP, which is like an older language used for WordPress and Facebook, but it's not necessarily the hot new thing. So now I'm seeing myself in the position where I might get leapfrogged, even though I'm not a developer that's looking for work. I run my own business, but I still want to be, you know, I still want to know what's going on.
Of course.
So yeah, if they had like an AI machine learning course, I would do it. I think Microsoft is offering some now at the moment, like an online one. But yeah, that would be my point. The other point, actually, just going full circle back to General Assembly, is that actually apparently they were valued at 400 milli
in their last funding
round.
Yes.
Yeah, and they were acquired for 400 milli.
Yes.
So essentially, the later stage investors pretty much got a flat return.
Yeah,
and the early stage investors made a killing.
Cash cow.
Yeah, I think even Jeff Bezos was part of it. Like, he needs any more money. So, the thing I wanted to, what is the what point am I trying to make it? Yeah,
you tell me.
Being early.
Yes.
How important is being early in your mind?
Well, that's really good. I was actually trying to find out what their valuation was at the Series A, because I think people like Andreessen Horowitz got in at that
so they're always getting
stage.
In.
They're really
getting in. But they're renowned for like paying for any valuation though. That's another thing that they're known for. Like they will just pay. Like if Uber was raising, they'd probably still invest now. But I think the benefit of getting early in all aspects is very important. Yeah.
But the thing is like,
so I think the way this is framed as, this is a great win for New York in the sense that it's a New York based company that has been acquired. And obviously, even if you look at London, like I don't necessarily know what we're doing in terms of massive acquisitions. I haven't heard anything through the grapevine about a 500 million plus acquisition in London.
No.
So shout out to New York. But in terms of the actual result of the company, it's like, it's an okay result per se. It's not like this is Instagram all my days. We just sold this for 1.1 billion and it's an amazing return for everybody involved. This was quite a large company that had quite a large footprint in terms of actual brick and mortar presence. And it's not a cheap business to run. There's a lot of overheads. Yes. So it's a good exit. It's not an amazing exit.
Yes. But could they have IPO'd? I mean, probably not, right? Like, you take the best exit strategy that's available to you.
I mean, there are certain businesses like WeWork where I look at the business model and I'm like, these are not necessarily tech companies. These are, they may be in the tech industry. You know, WeWork gives, rents out a lot of their tables to tech people and yes. General Assembly trains tech, but it's a very old school business. It's a school, essentially.
Mm.
So if they IPO'd, I definitely wouldn't be buying their stock. I would be like, this is just a normal school. I mean, yeah. I'm not trying to hate on them. It sounds like I'm hating on them right now, but that's not the case. Like, shout out to them. But
At the same time, like, you know, IPOs have been around way before the tech industry, right?
Yeah.
So I guess it's more about, like, you know, do we feel that this is a company that will continue to grow? Is this a company that's
defensible?
Is it defensible? Exactly. Is it generating hundreds of millions of dollars in revenue every year and on a journey to continue doing so? Because that's what makes me want to invest. You know, like when we think of venture capital, it's effectively a type of private equity, which is a type of investment banking. Mm. And it was just well suited to the fast growing software industry of the like 70s, 80s, because it was a new industry and it needed a new type of financing to accompany it because, you know, there are no projections. There is no data and evidence and stuff. And what we see with something like WeWork is a company which is just using a type of financing, which is typically for tech
and
companies.
And they bought Flatiron as well, which is another boot camp.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's all full circle.
It's all going
let's wrap up on General Assembly. Just shout out to them. Congrats to everyone involved and the founders.
Oh, also, I'm doing a free talk at General Assembly.
Oh, there we go. Look, perfect. Plug time. Where is it? When is it?
Last Monday of April, 30th April, 6:30 at their Whitechapel building.
£100 tickets?
It's free.
Okay.
Free. So, yeah, you
calm
can
down,
sign
everyone.
Up. You'll be there.
I'll be there.
Okay, so from winners on to losers.
Who's the loser?
Well, we've already touched on it. We don't have to spend too long on it. But actually, ironically, although it wasn't a great time for Zuckerberg in the hearing with the aftermath of Facebook and Cambridge Analytica,
I wouldn't necessarily say that it wasn't a great time.
Share price went up, didn't it?
Exactly, that's what I'm going to say. Why? Yeah, he actually convinced the markets that everything is okay because the way the market saw it is that these politicians were relatively clueless and they weren't going to regulate and they didn't know what to do and they didn't even understand what Facebook really was.
Yes.
So everybody was kind of came away with confidence that Facebook's future prospects are going to be okay.
Yes.
So I wouldn't necessarily frame it as a bad time. He actually came up and he brushed it off, really, as far as I'm concerned. He looked, obviously, you know, the memes and whatever, but in terms of cents and dollars, he did good.
What about the fact that companies like Bumble, other social networks have dropped Facebook logins as a result of...
Yeah, I read that. You know. I don't know. I think let's come back in a year and assess. I think a lot of this stuff now is... there's a lot of hoopla about it, but I think it'll die down. I think they asked Zuckerberg, has usage gone down?
Yeah.
And as you would expect, the answer was a big fat no. Like, I would have guaranteed that would have been the case. I think the average person doesn't really care, as to be brutally honest. Do you agree with that?
I think a lot of people probably check their privacy settings.
You think so?
Yeah, definitely.
As a percentage of Facebook users?
Oh. I mean, single digits.
Yeah, there we go. I would say sub 1%.
But that's because like a significant number of people on Facebook don't even know how to update their profile photo because they're like baby boomers and stuff like that.
And this is what I mean. As in, the average person doesn't give a damn. I think Facebook will be untouched. So... we made a note in our documents before the episode that we wanted to talk about a paid supported version of Facebook where there's a lot of mumbles now saying that they should offer an ad-free product where you opt in to subscribe and pay a certain amount a month. Would you do that? Would you pay $11 a month, no ad supported? And you are somebody who is conscious consumer.
Yeah.
You know, intelligent, understand what's going on in the tech savvy, in the tech industry. Would you pay?
Nah.
You wouldn't, exactly.
Nah,
this is what
I'm not
going
to pay. The thing is, like, why should I pay to correct Facebook's mistake? And if I think about it, of course, there's a lot to be gained from being a part of that social network and the ease with which I can sign into other apps or join other platforms, like using Facebook authorization is cool. But when I think of, like, the greater impact that that data has on like society and like how it's used and like how it's used to manipulate and stuff like that. I don't really feel good about paying to use it. I would rather that they sort their stuff out and be more transparent with regards to how data is being used, be more transparent with how they work with third parties, and basically like raise the bar. I feel like there's such an opportunity off the back of everything that's been happening for Facebook to just raise the friggin' bar and be like, you know what? Okay, yeah, we're a multi-billion dollar company, but this is about more than just money. This is about more than share price. This is about the future of humanity and how we are going to live in a data-driven age and an AI-driven age. I mean, I know that's not going to happen, but there might be another alternate reality.
After all that, you're like...
where it might happen, and I'm holding out for that, and I'm not gonna subsidize them, because in a way that's basically like they've created a negative externality and now I pay the tax to correct it out of my own income. That's post income tax, what I need to live off and enjoy.
Well, I wouldn't call it a negative externality. I can't even say the word. I wouldn't call it that. Just due to the fact that none of us are forced to use this product. We can all just opt out and never use this product. It's not like polluting the river. It's like, we can all just opt out and just say, you know what? I don't want to use this.
I don't know.
So if you want to...
how much choice do we really have when certain platforms, for example, the platform that I work for, Product Hunt, you can only create a new account using Facebook, AngelList, or Twitter logins. It's not the only community or social network that's taken that choice.
So the AngelList login, though, it's just like I just give them my email address, basically, right?
Yeah.
So you can.
But...
it's not completely pervasive.
I'm going to give you another thing. What about people that... live in a country different to where their family is,
yeah,
and don't necessarily have a lot of money to go back and visit all the time. Facebook has become the platform through which WhatsApp they communicate with people. Like, I think it is very easy sometimes to feel like we have a choice, but we know ourselves. Look, we were just talking about digital product design, and we know that a lot of psychology goes into how these things are designed so that they become addictive, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know how much choice people really do have.
Yeah,
to like completely opt out of Facebook.
Yeah. I think, you know, you're probably right. But I don't think the ad-free version will happen, to be honest. I think advertisers won't have it, because essentially people that can afford to pay $11 a month are the rich, luxury, like disposable income people.
Yes.
And that's what they want to target. So I don't think it will happen anyway. So I think we're talking just
hypotheticals. We should all have that and Facebook should pay for it. That's what I think.
But
Facebook was supposed to be forever free.
Yeah.
And now Now we see the cost of something that's always free.
So then you're making the argument then that there should be something that's not free.
I'm just saying.
Okay, so how about this? Someone tweeted this to me using the techish hashtag. Please use that, people, everybody. Yeah. And it was like, when you're being targeted for an ad, there should be like a gray link and you can see how they targeted you.
I like that.
Yeah. So there was a bit of controversy because Facebook allowed people to be targeted along racial lines.
Wow.
Yeah. And even like, say, don't show this to X racial group.
That's
now, if you could see under the hood and have to click that gray link and it's a little pop up and it says you were targeted for this ad because you are, you know, 18 to 35 year old, this university, whatever. Would that,
white person.
Yeah, exactly. So would that suffice for you? Would you be like, okay, I know what's going on at least?
It would be better than what it is now for sure.
Yeah.
Because that reminds me of like health warnings on cigarette packets or the way that they're campaigning to stop. You know, sweets are not going to have branding in the UK, hopefully, over the next 10, 20 years.
Okay, that's a tangent. But
hopefully, ideally, yes, I am for that, because people underestimate the impact sugar has on like shortening their lives.
Real talk.
So I feel that is a step in the right direction, because we're always playing catch up to technology. We're like, oh my God, yay, this new free thing that's making our life so much better. Fast forward 10 years. Oh, crap. Now we live in like a fascist world.
Donald Trump.
So if that is like one measure that makes me kind of like question things a little bit more, then that's good. And maybe we evolve from there. Why? What do you think? You don't think that's a good tactic?
I think it is. I wanted to raise one last point actually on
this.
Go
for it.
Yeah. So, and it's a negative sour note. There's a lot of murmurs now about, you know, Facebook needs to be regulated. And I was watching quite closely and Zuckerberg was like, yeah, we welcome regulation. So I said, okay, let me think about this. Why is he welcoming regulation? So the argument for that is that regulation is costly. So if I'm a new startup doing a social network, I probably can't afford the army of lawyers to make sure that I'm complying with all the regulations. It essentially becomes another barrier to entry and makes Facebook more dominant. Because Facebook, So I don't get twisted.
Entrench that monopoly.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's
so anyways, that is messed up. And we'll leave it on that messed up note. Everybody stay woke.
I will say one thing, there are lots of like really good websites out there that will talk to you about how you can like completely get off the grid if you want, or at the very least check your privacy. Look, I'm not saying
off the grid, like in a cabin in Montana somewhere, like,
hide in your bunkers. No, I'm not saying you need to go that far, but like there's like a really interesting like movement of people that are like, I just want to see how much information Facebook has on me. And there was one guy that worked out all the little profiles that Facebook had built, and it was crazy. There was like 135 separate data points that they had used to link to his name.
Yeah.
One of them was like that he likes girls, and one of them was like Pokemon, like whatever, you know, based on random pages that you've liked or things that you've shared.
Yeah.
It collects all this stuff and then builds this profile out of you. So I mean, maybe even just out of your own curiosity, you want to find out what's being held on you.
I think Facebook might know me better than my mum, to be honest.
Probably knows you better than you know yourself.
That's a good point. Yeah. On that scary note, we'll leave it. So this is an upbeat story that I like. I read it on Blavery. Shout out to Blavery.com. And I'm going to get the names right because I want to make sure they get their props. Two founders of an app called Invisu, Invesu. Troy Wilson and Eldridge Washington. I love those names. And basically, you may have all seen like these apps that round up your spending to the nearest dollar in order to help you save. So these guys have are trying to solve the problem about the fact that only 1% of VC funding goes to black founders. So essentially, it's a community-based app where it rounds up your spending and puts it into a pot, and everybody does it. And then everybody in the community can vote on which startups to fund.
I love that.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
I really hope it works. I really hope it works. I don't want to see, you know, in the future, people are still struggling to get funding when they've got a, you know, a promising idea or something like that. So
how would it work in practice? Like, if anyone's listening, is it US only at the moment?
Yeah, unfortunately.
Okay, so let's say you're listening in the US, you can just go on their website.
No, you download the app.
Okay, yeah.
So similar to these apps that let you save, you actually, you know what, in terms of the actual nitty gritty, because I haven't downloaded it, I don't know exactly how, because I've never actually used those kind of saving apps before.
So I used Appalition.
Okay, so you probably know better than me then.
And the way Appalition worked was like super straightforward. For Bail.
Yes, so that was really cool.
So this is an app that rounds up all of your purchases to help basically get bail bonds for black men, because they're disproportionately arrested and all this kind of stuff. And like the bail system is like really interesting in America, but basically you can be in jail even if you haven't been charged. So the way Appalition worked was I basically connected, I have a Bank of America account in the US, so I connected that account to the app, and any transaction I made, maybe it's like a direct debit going out, buy a coffee or whatever, it will round it up to the nearest dollar. And then those cents go into this fund. And the idea is, you know, there's hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of users around the country that are donating here as well. And then they work with a legal charity to then actually like handle the cases with that money.
So it's the same model essentially, but except for the final leg. So I think there's in the app, there's a UI where you can see the different companies. And they said it's like Shark Tank in your hand. Mm. So I don't know what it's like now, but hopefully, you know, there might be a video pitch.
Yes.
And somebody can say, okay, I'm working on this. And then everybody in the community votes.
Yes.
The majority votes. And then that person receives the investment.
Yes.
And then if that company is successful, then just like in a normal investment account, you would get the return proportionate to what you've invested in.
Cool.
I think it's ingenious. I hope to God it works, to be honest.
I think that's really interesting. I think...
Do you think it's a viable alternative to the VC model? Because I could tell, I could sense a note of skepticism in your face. So I know Abba quite well now.
The thing is, here's what I wanted to say about it. I think that any ways to increase capital to underrepresented founders, incredible. I'm always going to be behind it.
Yeah.
But... you know, one of the things that concerns me about this is that, you know, as an ordinary person, I'm not sure that diverting some of my income into something like this is like the best investment strategy for me, just like personally, because we really have to remember that venture capital is an extremely high risk type of investment opportunity. Like, I'm not a personal finance expert. There's like great blogs like Refined Currency and VestPod, if you're listening, for you to check out. And what I would rather see in our community as a person of color is more high net worth individuals using some of their capital to invest in these underrepresented founders. Because
Jay-Z,
there isn't enough of that happening. No, hey, Jay-Z,
he's
great
doing
work.
His bit. Yeah, he's doing his bit.
Jay-Z,
yeah,
did he represent?
Bit.
Where are the others?
Yeah.
Within our community, we have a lot of high-earning professional athletes, that's the US, UK, and beyond. We have a lot of high-earning musicians or people within the music industry. And then even further afield, there's like some 3 Comma Club people in the corporate space we probably don't even know about because they're keeping it low-key. And I want to see some of those people using their capital to invest in underrepresented founders.
Is like, it either or, though? Why can't there be both?
Please let there be both.
Even why can't we have a two-pronged strategy wherein those who have the means to do and those that might not invest otherwise do so here? I think it's
great.
I hear what you're saying.
I don't think
this is the panacea where it's going to fix everything.
Yeah.
So I think that's is that where you're coming from? You think this is not exactly. This is not the only solution? Yeah, I think it has to be a multi-pronged solution.
Like, I support this. I want to get involved with this. I'd love to be a part of it. But I think that as a community, basically what I'm trying to say is I want to put some of this accountability onto high net worth individuals in our community because I think we underplay the role that they have to play and we underplay their potential.
But I think we underplay the role that the average person can play as well. I think so often we think that, you know, the average person, and I put myself in that bracket, is voiceless in a capitalistic sense, in the sense that we have no real power to impact and shift the economies of our communities. And I think something like that is leveraging tech. And the thing is, where I do get your concern would be is if that the companies that are being voted on are like really high risk tech companies where like 1 in 100 will work. Let's keep it real. The odds of a startup working, we're all going into this open wide. It's quite hard, you know. But if somebody's opening up, if Auntie's opening up a little restaurant in the corner, why can't the community put $5,000 in there and own 5% of that?
I mean, that's crowdfunding, right?
Exactly. But this is for equity as opposed to where you might do something on Kickstarter where you're getting a little t-shirt in response. And I don't necessarily want the t-shirt. I might want to support you.
Yeah.
But why don't we make this something where it's a win-win?
Yeah.
And incentivize others to get involved. So you can be like, okay, you know, the community owns 10% of that or 15% of that or 30% of everything in the block.
Yeah.
So
I like that. I like that. Yeah. I think people should
I'd rather see in that sense. Because those of us that work in tech, we are still the minority of the minority. If in this, and even those who want to start tech companies is still a minority of a minority. But there's still so many people that want $5,000 so that they can open up their little, you know, whatever it may be. So yeah, I think it's a wonderful story. And we'll wrap that one up. I read an interesting article that was on First Round Capital's blog. They're a VC firm. And I do find it interesting when VC firms kind of get into media now. So
First Round Review is actually like one of the best blogs, I'd say. I think they've got like 9 different ones. But yeah, good quality writing.
So they had an article from Pandora. I hope everyone's familiar with them. And it was talking about how do they prioritize what to build, essentially. They've got a team of 40 engineers, which is quite large, but, you know, in the grand scheme of things in the tech game, it's quite small compared to, you know, the 4 Google, Facebook, and et cetera, et cetera. And essentially, they start every quarter by posing the question, what would be stupid not to do in the next 90 days? And from there, they define and scope every idea and break it down until they come up with a set of definable, you know, 6 or 7 things to hit every quarter. And they believe that, A, you shouldn't plan more than a quarter.
Wow.
Further ahead than that. And then also use that phrase, what would be stupid not to do in the next 90 days, as a way of distilling what your priorities are. And I actually really like this. I'm actually going to probably adopt this, actually, at least try and give it a go. Because I think inversion is a really helpful tool.
One of the ways that I interpret that, which is something I try to do a lot with Hustle Crew and really just any other like big goal, like I see Hustle Crew as a brand, I see Abadesi as a brand, and why are you shaking your head at me?
I was shaking
my head.
I laughed.
I'm not laughing at you.
I always just find it funny when people talk about themselves in the third person. Yeah, but don't worry. No.
I was just speaking.
I'm all for that. Don't get
to speak. You know what Abadesi thinks about this. what I meant to say was, this idea of what would be stupid not to do reminds me of like another phrase we use a lot in startups, which is low hanging fruit. So like when you think of like, okay, I'm going to go like pick fruit now, you go for like the lowest hanging ones because they're the easiest ones to get. And I think sometimes we can get distracted by other activities or other goals that even as a business owner, we neglect opportunities which are basically staring us in the face. Or sometimes there are opportunities which aren't that exciting or aren't that glamorous. So we're like, actually, let's not pursue that. But in reality, if it's generating revenue, you should go for it. So I like that. It forces you to kind of think, what are we not doing that we should be doing? Even if it's not the most glamorous thing to do, but it would be stupid not to do it, like they say.
And
I think that's cool.
What do you think about the idea that you shouldn't plan really more than 90 days ahead? Do you think that's wise? Because I'll put my cards on the table. I agree, and it's because I think I read it in the book by Basecamp, The Rework. Essentially, they said that planning is guessing. Like, if you're writing these five-year plans, it's BS. Like, you don't know what's going to happen. Like, nobody knows what's going to happen in 18 months. So you can't write a five-year plan. You should only really work in those kind of short sprint intervals.
I like that.
So you agree?
I think in terms of businesses, yes, because businesses are sensitive to so many things, including, like, the political climate and economic climate. And then also, like, what's happening to your customers. Like, there are so many trends that only start to emerge later in time that I think you should always have a longer-term plan. But maybe 80% of your inputs are focusing on the next 90-day plan, like the quarterly plan. You know what I mean? Like, having quarterly goals is very sensible, I think.
But we live in the era of the pivot, don't we? So it's like, where does that lie in relation to this? Because sometimes you may have to change completely what your business model. Like,
yes.
Based on, you know, so like a small example recently, a lot of publishers were screwed because Facebook changed their algorithm.
Yes.
You can't have that in a year plan. You just don't necessarily know unless you're really like, you've got some foresight. So yeah, I think this is...
How do you factor that in? I think...
How do you factor that in a year plan, for example? I'm doing air quotes.
Oh yeah, no, for sure. I mean, you know, you just have this sudden blip on your graph and you're like, yeah, that's when the Facebook algorithm changed.
Drop. You look at your Google Analytics and you just see that. See that roller coaster down. You're thinking, damn.
I think the reason why it's good to have a cutoff point, though, is because it also, like you said, means that you stop and reflect on whether you should continue on that path.
Yeah.
Or whether you should change. So, you know, I think, you know, everyone who's an entrepreneur or like has any kind of a project going on should have 90-day goals, quarterly goals. And also make sure that all their high-level goals aren't excluding things which are easy wins. Mm. This is about easy wins.
It's about easy wins, but also it's about human psychology because for some reason, inversion is really helpful. So Charlie Munger, who is the business partner of Warren Buffett, they're both billionaires. He uses that a lot. He says that if you wanted to help India, this is the example that he gave, some real colonial example, but he's like, if you wanted to help India, think to yourself, what would not help India? Or if you think to yourself, I want this job, or I want to strive forward in my career, what would I not do? So you would not be late, and you would not be rude, and you would not be slothly or whatever, and not do your work on time.
What is that?
Slothly. It's like one of the seven deadly sins.
Slothly. Okay,
I'm not sure if that's a real word. I might have just made that up.
Sluggish.
So it's a really simple but actually surprisingly quite effective way of actually managing psychology and thinking, okay, what should I not do here? Like, and from there, work backwards. Have I lost you?
I just feel like that's a long-winded way to get to a point. So it's like,
sometimes you don't see the obvious in front of you until you think it, until you sit down and write and say, what should I not be doing here? Like,
right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And here, what would be stupid not to do? So what for you, to get personal, the next 90 days, what would be stupid for Abba not to do? You look so confused right now.
Well, because I just feel like in your example, it sounds like Warren Buffett's friend writes the things that are stupid to do.
Yes, and then don't do them.
Right. Whereas really you're confusing. Now asking me what would be stupid not to do. So I now have to think of the things which are smart to do.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Yeah,
I'm going to need to think about that.
Okay, cool. We'll come back to this.
But what would be stupid not to do? I don't know. I guess be more active in promoting Techish on social media.
Yeah.
Because I do it a bit, but I don't really do it enough. Mm-hmm. Encouraging people like our listeners to use the hashtag Techish to engage in a conversation with us. Actually, something that I thought would be stupid not to do, but I'm not doing, it's also doing more guest blog posts and features on other platforms that share the same audience as us. We already mentioned one, Blavity, but there are so many other platforms out there, you know, Forbes, Huffington Post, Business Insider, etc., etc. Be great to write stuff about what we're talking about for them and reach a wider audience.
All about for Hustle Crew.
Ooh, what would be stupid not to do? So one of the things I'd be stupid not to do is just like work with schools and universities. Because we're now getting closer to the end of the school year and there are going to be so many people thinking about career planning. So I started doing a bit of that. Could probably do more.
There we go.
Well, also integrating Gmail plugins.
Oh yeah, go on.
Because you know, like a big part of business development for a founder is chasing people. Mm. Like you send out one sales email and then you're like chasing.
So you're the person that's harassing
me.
I'm just circling back. I'm just circling back on that previous email.
Then get back to me on that last one. Any chance for a call today?
What's your favorite passive aggressive? Like just follow up. Just circling back.
Subject lines, like putting stuff in the subject lines. Like, oh wait. Either like I'll assume you don't want to help, but just checking, or like something in the body, which is basically like, I assume you don't want to help, but just to double check and be sure. Guilt trip, basically. Guilt trip. That's my tactic. Lord. How about you?
Stupid not to do, or my favorite.
Both,
email, but
start with what would be smart to do / stupid not to do.
Stupid not to do for me, I'm thinking about adding some kind of like reoccurring revenue model into pocketjobs.com just to make it more sustainable for the thing. And I think then over the next 90 days, that would be stupid not to do.
Mm.
Stupid not to do for me would probably be not put more emphasis onto Instagram. I have been kind of so this is a very 2018 problem. So we have a big following on Twitter, for example.
Yes.
But I've always realized it, but I've just been deluding myself in the sense that Twitter as a platform is either stagnating or probably not as growing as fast as the other platforms. And I say yes. Instagram. So I'm going to make more effort basically on our IG as a marketing channel, essentially. So that's two things that are stupid not to do. My email thing, my favorite passive aggressive email thing is to CC somebody when you're working in a corporate environment and be like, just dump them in it. Anyways, don't do that. That's terrible.
Digital marketing tip, though, what you were saying around Instagram active users and Twitter and Twitter's active users, there is actually like a really huge gap. I'm going to have to like double check, fact check this. But I mean, at least that was what I can see as a quick check on Instagram. Mm.
Yeah,
800 million monthly active users.
If you want to break it down, I would say now that if you're marketing, the tier one platform is at Instagram. And then I would say emails. So like some kind of mailing list type thing.
Email newsletter.
Yeah, email newsletter, collecting emails. And IG, I'll put them as number one. Number two, you know, Facebook and YouTube. And then I'll put Twitter at three. And I've been hustling backwards in the sense that I've been doing it probably the inverse of that. So basically, I need to fix up, look sharp, as my boy Dizzy would say. Thanks for listening, everybody. Use the hashtag techish and hit us up on Twitter, Michael Behane _ and Abadesi is at Abadesi, first name.
Only.
Yep. And yeah, keep sending us your tweets, your emails. We really appreciate it. And shout out to David Lammy for standing up to the Tories about the whole Windrush deportation debacle.
U-turn.
I haven't always been his biggest fan, but that was raw. Yeah.
As always.
And Beyonce as well. Shout out to Beyonce for Beychella.
Beychella.
Yeah, we're not all just tech nerds. We pay attention to pop culture. Yeah, that's it, really.
Yeah, subscribe.
Subscribe.
And like.
Yeah, there you go. Before I forget.
Subscribe and like, and see you soon. Yeah.